The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
This morning, and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news all day. It is Wednesday, the 3rd of August, 2022, and you are on the clock with Erin Green. On the clock, we engage organizations, institutions, social and cultural leaders, and ordinary people to better understand the impact of public policy, private sector development, and emerging social and consumer trends. On the clock, we have conversations that help us understand and navigate a rapidly changing Bahamas. Good morning, Bahamas. That song we opened the show with, I tell you, I'm committed, I'm dedicated to focusing on Bahamian music and Bahamian culture in an attempt to illuminate, right, to shine light on all the possibilities of what it means, what it could mean to be Bahamian. So that song we played this morning, first of all, was inspired, the choice of song was inspired by my guest for today's show. That was Nina Simone performing a cover of O Bear Woman, written by Tony McKay, Exuma, the O Bear Man. And when I found it, so we already have heard Priscilla Rollins singing O Bear Woman. I think Tony McKay, if he didn't write it for her, she may have been the first woman artist to perform it. I think O Bear Woman. But here's Nina Simone covering Tony McKay, O Bear Woman. Sometimes you got to look into the eyes of foreigners to see how truly powerful your own people are. Sometimes. It's a wonderful song. Hopefully throughout the show, we're going to play it some more. So I'm expecting Dr. Nyambi Hall Campbell-Dean to join us today to talk about the Bahamas National Reparation Committee's, the organization's work, and to help us understand some new terminology being used by local activists and advocates. So for a part of the discussion, I guess I'm going to ask the audience to call or text in and tell me, What do you read? What do you hear? What do these terms mean to you? The first term is organic Bahamian. The second term is indigenous Bahamian. And the third term is foundational Bahamian. These are words, terms that I'm hearing more and more in common discourse, conversation across social media, in advocacy, right, in more formal spaces in advocacy as well. And so I'd be interested to find out what you think that those terms mean. Producer, is the guest in the Zoom room yet? She is? All right, 1 second. Good morning, Dr. Hall Campbell-Dean, how are you?
Good morning. I'm great. You started off with my favorite Bahamian artist, and my favorite American artist. So I couldn't be better.
Yeah, and like I said, the statement itself, this year's Emancipation Day statement, inspired me to go and look for the song. And I imagine that this is the song that you were referencing in the statement. And also, the statement itself, right? Particularly, and we hope we get to that when you or show us some of the small things that we can do to celebrate or engage Emancipation Day this year. I thought this is one of those things. You know, sometimes we need to hear ourselves, like go back into the past, read some history or engage some history, and get a sense of how far you've come from where you've been, but also the sort of impact or import you've had on the world.
Indeed, indeed.
That song is just, and the performance is just so cool. So let's start here, Dr. Hall Campbell-Dean. Please introduce yourself, tell the people who you are, and then tell us briefly about the National Reparations Committee.
Okay, well, good morning, everyone. My name is Dr. Nyambi Hall Campbell-Dean, granddaughter of James Campbell and Orion Johnson, Ida Hall, and Hanover Hall. I am the chair of the Bahamas National Reparations Committee and also an associate professor of psychology, head of the psychology program at the University of the Bahamas.
Now, so let's pause here before we get into the National Reparations Committee. You did something just now, right?
Yes.
You call off your people's name. You ain't wait for me to ask you who your people is, where you come from. You call off your people's name. Like, what is does that have a name, a specific name or term? Or is this a part of African culture or indigenous culture, which shifts across race, right? Where we identify ourselves through our lineage?
Yeah, indeed it is. You know, it's about grounding. It's about connecting. It's a worldview that centers who you are as related to who you are to others, right? So if you ask me who I am and my response is based on things that I have done or what I do, but does not include who I am to others, then I haven't really told you who I am, right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of this Ubuntu philosophy. I am because we are, right?
Right.
So about making the connection and realizing that above all, our connection to others is what is important.
Right. I just, as you were speaking, I remembered, like, how could I forget, when we look at sort of Nordic cultures, right? Mm-hmm. The way that they pass on names. So Mark Johnson is Mark, the son of John.
Right.
Right? And so your name describes who you are in relation to your people.
Indeed.
Yeah. Indeed. That's powerful, I think. That's a good thing. Well, I'm going to recommend that when we come to what are some of the small ways or actions, right, that people can take to celebrate or engage emancipation or the recognition of emancipation more deeply is to explore your genealogy.
And that's a powerful thing to do.
Yeah.
It really is, yeah.
And then create a space where begin to create an environment where it's okay to do that. It's because people get a lot of privilege from saying, oh, like I said, oh, I is Corinne Mitchell's granddaughter, right? Uh-huh. And it would be great for everybody, that same sort of feeling or experience. And even when we are related to or born of people who have done bad things, right, we still need to create a space where people can experience dignity or be dignified in the connection to their people, even if their people did some bad things.
Right.
Yeah.
And who can say that their people didn't do some bad things?
Right. I mean, I come from a long line of Chikchani catchers. I sure, as far as the Chikchanis are concerned, we are very bad, bad people. You know, but let's get back to the conversation. The National Reparations Committee. Tell us briefly what it is.
So the Bahamas National Reparations Committee is a member of the larger CARICOM Reparations Committee, of which 14 Caribbean states are also members. Mm-hmm. And our mandate is basically to advise the government and advocate for reparations from former colonial masters for the crimes against humanity involving the genocide of the native peoples of these lands and the endured through the transatlantic slave trade. We have a 10-point reparations plan that outlines how we think these reparations should be made. They include things like a full and formal apology as the first one, mm-hmm. Psychological rehabilitation, cultural outreach, education programs, all the way down to national debt cancellation. And so you can go on the CRC webpage and, mm-hmm. and find a full outline of what those points are.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay, I got some text here. If you don't mind, I want to sort of slide into the text, right? And so at the beginning of the show and in the notes, I said some activists and advocates, a subset of nationalists, I think a subset of nationalists, that's my label, have started using the term organic Bahamian, right? Mm-hmm. And then we remember the former Speaker of the House referred to indigenous Bahamian. I think he was saying that he and his wife are indigenous Bahamians, right? Mm-hmm. And several times I've seen the term foundational Bahamian recently, right? Mm-hmm. And so I asked the audience to tell us what they think when they hear those terms. Mm-hmm. So I want to get into the text very quickly. The first text says, when I think of an organic Bahamian, I think no seeds. Mm-hmm. Well, that's one of the critiques is that are we, I don't know the proper academic term, but we are incorrectly sort of using a term, taking a term from one space into another. And I don't know if organic in the way that we use it in agriculture, even mm-hmm. though we're talking about like growing living things, I don't know if we can apply the term organic to the conversation about citizenship, belonging, you know, like who belongs here, who doesn't belong here. Right. And so I understand the tongue-in-cheek remark from the texter. And I got another one that says, great show as usual. Indigenous Bahamians is someone from Fox Hill. Foundational Bahamian is someone from Lyford Key. Lyford Key is not a foundation, even though they have a foundation. Thank you very much, texter. And an organic Bahamian is from Bain Town. So when I hear foundational Bahamian, I like it. Like if I put all my biases aside, I like it because it the people who founded, who settled, who began to build the nation. And I think that that can include European and African descent people as well that re-inhabited these islands after the decimation of the original indigenous people.
Yeah.
Go on.
No, I think all of these terms are really interesting, right? And especially when we say things like indigenous, to me that, and this is just my personal perspective, indigenous means Lucayans, Tainos, Arawaks, mm-hmm. right? That's what I think of when I hear the term indigenous. And then something like foundational, to me, it brings up more questions than answers, right? Because it's like, well, when did the foundation start? Did mm-hmm. the foundation start in 1973? Did it start in 1968? Did it start in 1492? Mm-hmm. Did it start, but right? So where... which foundation are we talking about when we say foundational Bahamian? Yeah. Right. And I think that those are good questions to have, and good conversations to have as we try to really, you know, still deal with this thing of what it means to be Bahamian.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've heard a lot of, not a lot, I haven't been to school, use the term indigenous in a new way, right? And so I agree with you. When I hear indigenous, I think of Tainos, Lucayans, right? Mm-hmm. Caribs. But these academics suggest that a people displaced or resettled could be in that new place so long that they are now considered indigenous. Mm-hmm. Now, for me, on the back end of that is sort of the idea that, well, if I cannot trace my genealogy back to where I came from, right? From where I know I'm from Africa, but Africa is a whole continent with 1,000 different languages and 7,000 mm-hmm. different tribes and cultures, right? Mm-hmm. For a rough estimate. And so, to me, this new use of indigenous seems to apply best when I cannot trace my roots back to the source. And so I am enabled or allowed to claim, well, look here, I'm an African. I don't know where I come from in Africa, but I've been here in the Caribbean, in the Bahamas for so long. It's fair for me to say that I now indigenous to this space. And is that healthy, but is that a reasonable way of looking at these things for the, you know, for the purpose of discourse, of collective discourse?
I absolutely think, I think it's very reasonable. I think the only thing that that I would caution against, right, is mm-hmm. when we say indigenous because we can't trace back to the roots, that we're identifying the accurate route, right? Like to maybe the country in Africa or the tribe in Africa, but recognizing that Africa is that route. Because so as I started off, for example, listing my grandparents, my grandfather was from Turks Island.
Mm-hmm.
So then are we saying that I'm not an indigenous Bahamian because my roots doesn't trace back far enough to a person that was born in the Bahamas, right? Like, where do those lines start? Where do they stop? Mm-hmm. You know, we live in a migratory place. So who gets to then be indigenous?
Right.
And we don't want to begin to use these terms as dog whistles, right? To indicate that I have a claim to this space and you do not.
Right, right. I agree. You know, I agree. And so, you know, like you say, I think we should talk about it, but very carefully, and be very careful to curate the space in which we talk about it. Because for instance, right, I got a text here, and the text says, Miss Green, so you trying to say that Sean Connery isn't an indigenous, a foundational Bahamian? I'm here to say, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't think Sean Connery is a foundational Bahamian. And I think, you know, Sean Connery could have contributed tons to the development of movies and the arts in the Bahamas. Right? Maybe even environmental pursuits, maybe. I don't think that alone qualifies to be called a foundational Bahamian in the sense that I think people are trying to use it.
Right, right.
But I think the term foundational may have come up because people are concerned that in all of our Black majority talk, right, and our Black Afro-majority nation makeup, that we may forget that it is people of European descent
mm-hmm.
that first re-inhabited these islands, right? And it's people of European descent that sort of began the new journey of the of these islands that at that point in time, I don't think were called the Bahamas yet. I'm not sure. So we're talking about the Lutheran adventurers and I think they brought some Africans with them, and the European people and Africans that would have come through that time. Maybe the term is an attempt to ensure that we don't forget the European descent minority population that also was here. So like when we had an uproar a few months ago when a prospectus was in it with a member of the Holowesko family indicating that they are 12th generation Bahamian, right? Mm-hmm. And many people felt like that was some sort of slight against African descent Bahamians, that it was sort of showing off or bragging, you know, making a genealogical claim that the average person is unable to make in the country. But, you know, what's wrong with saying, hey, my people have been in this place for 12 generations? But is there other language that we use other than foundational?
To indicate our heritage?
Yeah. Like, what's a good term to replace foundational in that context?
See, I don't think that there's anything wrong with foundational. I don't think that, you know, we would replace it. You know, if you could trace your family lineage. And I think this is a part of the conversation around why we need to talk about like issues of race and heritage in the country, right? Mm-hmm. You can trace your family history back for 12 generations. That's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
But we also need to recognize that the tragedy is that many of us cannot, right? Mm-hmm. and why that is. But and that those two things can exist at the same time.
Yes.
Right? That you can be proud of where I come from at the same time and both of us be Bahamian.
Yes, yes. Yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt. And thank you for delving into that with me. I get another text here, a couple more texts coming in. First one is from the earlier part of the discussion. Hi, wow, I never knew that Mark Johnson, meaning Mark, the son of John. And another text says, hi, I believe one becomes an indigenous Bahamian when they are baptized in Junkanoo. You become a reformed person. That is not to suggest that anything other than Bahamian is lesser than, you know. But I agree. You become a reformed person when you are baptized in Junkanoo. And that's another perhaps conversation for another time. Like, what are the markers, right, that we use to signal or to indicate that that's a Bahamian?
Right.
Because a lot of people are sort of starting to say, like, if you don't rush, you don't do Junkanoo, then you ain't no real Bahamian. And I challenge them on that and say, maybe it's rake and scrape. Maybe it's rake and scrape, right? Like, if there were a standard, it would be rake and scrape and not Junkanoo. Putting all my biases aside. But Dr.
Even question why, you know, 50 years after independence, we in the Bahamas are still having these conversations, right? Like, what is it about our culture, our context, where we're still kind of figuring it out? Is this Bahamian? Is this not, right? Where other island states may not be having those same types of conversations.
Right. And you off. Just thinking in playing Gumbe music and listening to and playing Gumbe music from that era, when you hear the last names, you hear the accents, the voices singing and performing music in the Bahamas or Bahamian music, and you think, well, that isn't what I thought the Bahamian was, you know, way back then. And so that would be, that sort of Gumbe period would be a great space to interrogate, right? What did Bahamian mean then? What were the markers? You know, what did you have to be or do to claim that you were a Bahamian?
Right.
And so that Doctor, I think we need to take a break. Okay. I got a text that says, a great show as usual. If you put mayonnaise in your Kong salad, you are 100% not Bahamian. Dear Texter, I will not give this number to the police. But if I do, trust me, they're coming to take your Bahamian card. The first rule of being a Bahamian is you can't just declare that somebody is not Bahamian. No, sir. Anyway, my producer's about to take us to the break with our friend, Mr. McKay. Obia man, pay me what you owe me. Dr. Nyambi Hall-Campbell-Dean, please hold the line. When we come back, I got another hot question for you. Independence Day or Emancipation Day, which one is more important in the psyche of the African? You guys stay tuned. On the Clock with Aaron Green. We'll be right back.
How important collecting your money can be to the success of your business. Start your relationship with Fidelity today so that we can show you the many options available to you with our merchant services. From click and pay options online to merchant terminals and e-commerce options, we're here to help your business succeed. For more details, speak to one of our business development officers at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit our website at fidelitygroup.com or visit any of our branches. Fidelity, we're good
for you. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Parents, it's that sweet time of year again.
Yeah. The kids are going back to school.
So pick up your copy of the Nassau Guardian's Back to School Supplement, because
it's the most wonderful time of the year.
Put your students in the latest styles at the lowest prices, because summer break is almost over and our Back to School Supplement is filled with brand name back to school supplies at discounted prices, store locations, hours, and contact details.
It's the happiest season.
Advertisers, call the Nassau Guardian today at 302-2300 or call your account executive to get in on the 2-for-1 insertion deal. If it's uniforms, shoes, books, backpacks, calculators, art supplies, laptops, tablets, or whatever is on your back-to-school supply list, your ad should be in the Nassau Guardian's back-to-school supplement.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Welcome back. Sorry about that, producer, for rushing you. Man, anyway, it's so great to hear yourself through the voices of other people. That's us, Bahamas. That's us. Welcome back, Dr. Hall Campbell-Dean. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, good. You're still there. To the listeners, if you want to join this conversation, you can call us at 323-6232, 325-4316, or 325-4259. And the text line is 422-GR96. I see you there, caller. Give me a moment. I'm coming right to you. I got some texts here. Text says, if you're born here, you are an indigenous Bahamian. Now, the text says, this place is super xenophobic. Most 99% of our last names came from white Europeans. The fact that we originally came from Africa, Smith and Green are not African names. Listen, I am going to make Green an African name. I'm just going to make it one. Absolutely. And another text says, you're born here, you're Bahamian. You're indigenous. You're born there. You're born there. Period. Another text here says, Bahamians are the legal residents and indigenous citizens of the Bahamas, whose grandparents and great-grandparents are more than likely indigenous Bahamas-born and bred people. We are all of African descent, but countries have been divided up and borders established. Stay in your lane just because you're black don't give you a right to illegally breach another black country's borders and feel entitled to citizenship. Is that explanation enough? Dear Texter, I don't have a lane. I have a planet. The whole planet. The entire planet. I don't have a lane. Now, if you were alien and you were like earthlings, y'all are new to the space travel thing, stay in your lane. I would feel you. But I don't have no lane. I have a planet that I can enjoy. I ain't worried about no politics and nationalism and need passport and border. You think the Europeans care about no border and passport when they send Christopher Columbus around here?
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they sent a boy from Spain just the other day to tell us that everything in the water in the territory called the Bahamas that they think belongs to Spain, they come in to take it. But black people must just sit back and hold on to a little piece of sand. Anyway, forgive me, audience, forgive me, Dr. Hall. Me and that texter was talking for a second. Thank you, texter, for sharing that sentiment. These are more things that we need to talk about. Another text, and then if we go to this call, and then we're going to get back to our conversation. It says, when I think of indigenous Bahamians, I think of the women who don't like to wear no clothes, always have a made-up headpiece for special occasions. Dear texter, are you in is this an attempted political satire to say that, look here, I have indigenous Bahamians, I think of Afro descent women that tend to dress like I think women in Africa dress or would have dressed, you know, in the time before we were taken from there. Is that what that text is, texter? But thank you very much for sharing. Producer, I see we got a caller. To the caller we lost, I'm sorry. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Good morning to what?
Good morning. How are you?
Not bad. You know, this, you are talking to the right woman, a person on your guest, you know,
yes.
when it comes to this, who are Bahamians, you know? Because, you know, she is in the council, Bahamian Council of Reparations, you know? So I would say to the Bahamians, right, that ask the question. You should say, who are the inheritors of the Bahamas, right? Is it the Hollowescos, you know, or is it the offspring of the politician named Stephen Dillon?
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it the you know, this being a black nation, you know, is it the who came here? Because, you know, dealing with reparation is them who need this reparation, this tangible reparation, this economic reparation, right?
Mm-hmm.
We should ask them whether they came here as Aleutian adventurers. They were brought here at their own will. not like the ones who immigrate here. You understand me?
Mm-hmm.
By their will. You see, so when it comes to the inheritance, will these people, these blacks or whites who came here, will they inherit the Bahamas as well as the place that they migrated from? You see, so and then like I said, the Holoresco, are they conquerors? You understand me? So they should inherit the Bahamas? You know, see, these are the issues that we need to deal with, you see?
And for me, we need to, before all of that, ask ourselves questions like, well, what does inheritors mean? And what does ownership mean, right? And what does responsibility mean when we talk about these things? Very, very interesting. Very, very. Which sort of leads me to a question that I really wanted to ask.
Mm-hmm.
Independence Day or Emancipation Day, right? Which one do you think has been more powerful, I guess, or impactful? And which one should we focus on more, I guess, if we could even suggest that?
Yeah, that's a hard question. I don't know how to weigh the two. I guess in my mind, there would be no Independence Day if there were no Emancipation Day. So it might be more of a chicken and egg argument,
mm-hmm.
right? But I am interested in what, and I guess the psychologist in me, right? Like, what are we thinking of when we say these terms? Like, when we say emancipation, what does that really mean? Historically, as mentioned in the Emancipation Day piece that's on the Bahamas National Reparations Facebook page, and I encourage all of your listeners to engage us through our Facebook page and check that piece out. But you know, the little that we were taught about emancipation in school, it gave the impression that, okay, on this day, all of the enslaved people were free, and we just, you know, ran out in the streets and had this big celebration, and slavery was no more, and boom, the end. And, you know, we're coming to learn through history that wasn't really necessarily the case, right? Even if we understand the truck system that was implemented after emancipation in the Bahamas, that this idea of freedom or people being able to move freely and get fair pay for their work really didn't happen after emancipation in the way that we thought it did. And so in the same sense, you know, I think independence might hold more cachet in our context because there's still so many people alive that can speak to that history, right? And remember that day. But in the same vein, 50 years from now, what will our children be thinking of when they think of right? Would that be considered the day that we became a truly sovereign nation and started to engage in things of ourselves, by ourselves and for ourselves as Bahamian people? Will we really be able to look at 19th July 10th as that date, as that moment? Or are we still trying to find that day and trying to find that moment? So I think that these dates should be indicators for us to celebrate what we have done, but also for us to question where we are.
Right. As I was going to ask another question, maybe I should have asked it first, but are emancipation and independence acts, like actions? Are they states of being, or mm-hmm. are they processes?
I would definitely argue for a process, mm-hmm. for a process, right? I think that we're always in a state where we can become more free, right? More free to express the thoughts that we have, the feelings that we have, the things that we want to do. And that doesn't mean, right, that you can just, you know, cough and not wear a mask because you're free. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
There's an understanding that with a freedom also comes a responsibility. But the freedom to be able to believe in ourselves, right? The freedom to, as we talked about in the letter, to recognize that this language, this beautiful language that we speak is not broken, right? The freedom to wear your hair the way it comes out of your head naturally and still be perceived as professional. The freedom to build environments that suit our context so that we don't have to have air conditioning everywhere because it's hot, but you've built, you know, a space that allows the breeze to flow through. You can wear shorts to work because it's hot and you still get respected, right? So these are the types of things that I'm talking about when I say, you know, a freedom to really be who we are in the context that we live in.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And in that freedom, like, I'm 46 now, I like to refer to myself as an old person, not because I think I'm old, like physically old and can't do certain things, but I'd like to take on the mindset of an old person, right? I have a healthy dose of misery over here, a healthy dose of mischievousness over here, and a healthy dose of I can't stand nobody in the back, right? But when I take on that sort of persona of being an older person, right, it's like you become an adult and you're free to do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
And some of us quickly and some of us not so quickly realize that we don't want to do half of the things that we thought we wanted to do. You know, and,
right.
and we begin to moderate ourselves. But I wonder if you will ever get to the point where you govern yourself, if you, you know, properly govern yourself, if you never truly experience that freedom.
Right.
And I, you know, I wonder if that's what's happening with a lot of our young people and the lack of rites of passage, right, in this development space. If you don't mind, can I go to a call right now?
Please.
All right. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Holiday, talking voice along with you here in Pretty Eyes Screen along with your guest.
Morning.
We need justice, law, and order in this country.
Yes,
but
sir.
I want to ask your guest a question. Miss, how are you?
I'm well.
What I want to ask you now is that you observed a lot of situation in this country, you know, those things in which you speak of, do you think that the two parties that basically run this country is to that place in which you speak of, or those, or help us to observe or experience those situations in which you speak of?
I think that they can. I absolutely think that they can. But I think that they can because I understand that we are those parties. Right? Expanding the notion I'm not saying that in the naive sense, right? Understanding that there are hierarchies that are in place in this country, that there are doers and gatekeepers, understanding all of that, but ultimately recognizing, right, that when we talk about parties or politics or governments, that it's us.
Mm-hmm.
It's us. You know, so if we're talking about those two parties and we're seeing them as an instrument to take us to where we want to go, then we have to engage those instruments. We have to use them as tools, right? Because that's what they are. They're simply tools. They're agents. They're ratchets that we have to make work.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we work them, right, if you work the tool, then the tool will work for you.
Absolutely.
It's how we have to perceive it in that way first. Yeah,
absolutely. I would say that I question whether the current political culture mm-hmm. can tolerate these ideas, right? Mm-hmm. That these ideas are counterintuitive to the way that politically believe they have to govern,
mm-hmm.
right? And so I question whether they have the capacity, not the will, but the ability to make it so, to make it happen, right? But in the same vein as you, that doesn't mean that they cannot develop the capacities, right? Or that we, the people, cannot demand that they focus their energies on those capacities and shifting the culture in that way. It's absolutely possible. It's absolutely possible. So there's a statement in the, in fact, I want to read the first paragraph of the Emancipation Day statement.
Please.
It is, and it starts here. The incomparable Nina Simone, who covered the work of Bahamian genius Tony McKay, was once asked in an interview, what does freedom mean? She struggled to verbalize her answer, at first saying that freedom is just a feeling that cannot be described. Then, in a state of clarity, expressed that freedom is no fear. On this, our 184th Emancipation Day, I invite you to question, what does freedom mean to you? Your answer may be different from mine, and I'm sure that our answers are significantly different from those of our ancestors who engaged in everyday acts of agency for their manumission for over 400 years. Indeed, their questioning was different from ours, but we must still question. I think that's just so powerful. It's so powerful.
You read it so powerfully. I was like, wow, that's pretty good.
Well, thank you for writing it, madam. Thank you. And thank you for the committee for doing the work, right, that creates an environment in which we can share these things. There's another statement I pulled from there, and I want to ask you, what does it mean when you say, quote, as a people, our history of enslavement is twice as long as our history of emancipation?
Yeah, so that's just basically looking at the numbers, right? Like, slavery lasted centuries, four centuries. We haven't been, if we're using the Emancipation Day 1834 as a marker, mm-hmm. we haven't been free for half of that yet. Right. So when we look at that, right, can you imagine being the person that was born 200 years into slavery?
Yes.
There was no way for you to perceive not being in that state because it had happened for 200 years before you and was going to happen for 200 years after you. Right. There was mm-hmm. no concept free. There could be no real concept of freedom for you yet. They believe that it was possible, right? Mm-hmm. Because if they didn't believe, then it wouldn't have happened. And so that's just to say, like, when we recognize where we are now, right, less than 200, the Emancipation Day, that we can still believe that reparations is possible. We might not be able to see it, but if we work towards it and have that, you know, mustard seed grain of faith, and work towards it, then these are things that we can achieve and engage in.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you so much. Now, Dr. Nyambi Campbell Hall Dean,
mm-hmm.
I know that you're also a community psychologist, right?
Yeah.
And I want to, I'm doing it publicly. I know you're very, very busy. But I want to sort of send out an open invitation as well. We've seen a number of alleged or suspected suicides. We've yeah. seen a number of drownings and accidents in the water over the last couple of weeks, including the loss of a small boy in Yellow Elder Pond. A young man, he's still a minor, 17-year-old, who went missing mm-hmm. out at sea. And so, you know, I wanted to ask us all to hold each other in prayer, in strength, in our families, in our communities. But I also want to extend a space to community psychologists, to mental health professionals, to family and wellness professionals, extend a space to come and talk about these issues, to provide a space for Bahamians to call and engage, question, share around these issues. We just don't have enough space to hold our grief. We don't have enough space to help us process our grief either. And so I just want to throw this out while I have you on the line and to ask you to please share with your colleagues that a space is available here.
Indeed, indeed. And quickly, can I just add to that with suicide? You know, a lot of if someone in your life is talking and expressing ideas or thoughts of suicide, you want to take that seriously. Right. A lot of times you think, oh, they always just joking or playing. But if someone expresses that they are suicidal, we want to take note, try and seek some solace or some help. The Community Counseling and Assessment mm-hmm. Center on Collins Avenue is open and available for people to walk in, whereas a Sandilands needs a referral. You would want to know, does that person have a plan? Right. If they're expressing that they're suicide, OK, if you were to kill yourself, and it may seem morbid or morose, but what would you do mm-hmm. if they can lay out a plan, if they have thought about it to the point where they know exactly the steps that they would take? Then you really want to take that seriously and find help, contact someone, a physician.
Right away. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining me today. Thank you to the National Reparations Committee for allowing you to join. And thank you to UB and all of the professional spaces that let you be with us this morning. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Erin.
Absolutely. You've been on the clock with Erin Green. Guardian Radio AM with Cecil Newry is up next. It looks like it's going to be a great show. I'm just going to leave you all with this little bit of fire. It's not that I'm choosing violence today, but the last text says, Erin, slaves brought that upon themselves because if they didn't want to be enslaved, they should have broken free. Anyway, Bahamas, have a great day. Today is a day to love each other.